Welcome to Stories from 400 Feet, the podcast that gives you the inside story on what is happening in the drone industry, from the everyday to the not-so-everyday events that define this industry and push it forward. If a drone flies, we'll be there.
Hi, I'm Danielle Gani, chief storyteller for Volatus Aerospace, and today I am joined with Jacqueline Reber, Haley Bix, Garrett Cruz, and Trevor. I'm going to just let everyone introduce themselves. Trevor, let's start off with you.
Hi, Danielle. My name is Trevor Van Dyke, and I'm a 2018 graduate of Iowa State's geology program. That's where I met Garrett and Jacqueline. Garrett and I graduated together. And then Jacqueline served on my graduate committee during my stint in grad school at Iowa State. Currently, I am bouncing around the state of California using a drone to perform wildfire mitigation utility pole inspections.
Hey, Garrett, can you briefly introduce yourself and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Garrett Cruz, and I am the director of flight operations for Pacific Triangle, which is a drone utility provider based out of Southern California here. We do all sorts of cool stuff with drones. So everything from mapping to, like Trevor said, utility pole inspections and all sorts of different stuff. So I've been in the industry now for going on 4 years. And prior to that, I met Jacqueline at the Iowa State Geology Department, where I got my degree at. And then after that, I worked in the mining industry doing drone surveys and inspections. I went through 4 years now within the drone industry and mostly spent my time here in Southern California with some travels all over the place. But that has been my bread and butter, and met Trevor through the Iowa State program as well. And now we work together down here in Southern California. We thought we could offer some help with Iowa State's research project that happened to be in our home now.
Fantastic. And last but not least, Jacqueline and Haley, can you both introduce yourselves and what you've been doing over at Iowa State?
Yeah, my name is Jacqueline Reber. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Geological and Atmospheric Sciences at Iowa State University. As you probably can hear, I'm not from America. I'm from Switzerland. Well, I'm a total newbie when it comes to drones. So this was the first time I've had anything to do with this. What I normally do is I teach at Iowa State, of course, and I'm interested in my research in understanding various types of earthquakes. While we all know about fast earthquakes that destroy cities, etc., not everybody is aware that earthquakes also can happen really slowly. They're not really called earthquakes anymore. They're called slow slip events. But my research is basically focusing on understanding how you get from one to the other and understanding what's the physics that governs this wide spectrum in motion that either can be very destructive or basically harmless for people. And this is where then the drone activity is going to come in.
Really exciting. Haley.
Yeah, my name is Haley Bix, and I'm one of Jacqueline's students. So I'm pursuing a master's degree in geology here at Iowa State as well. Also, I'm studying the slow movement beneath the Earth's surface that can cause earthquake events and things like that.
Really important work you're both doing. Can you talk a little bit about how your most recent project in California was helping to inform or at least collect some data about what you're trying to study?
Yeah, absolutely. How about I'll give the background and then I hand it over to Haley for the details of what we're actually trying to do in San Simeon. So the U.S. West Coast is really conveniently located because it has all these sediments that were originally part of a subducting oceanic plate. That means it's like a denser plate that slowly subducted under the American continent. And while it did so, it was dragging with it all its sediments, and it was gathering some new sediments while it's subducted. And out of some unknown process, we find these sediments that used to be at the surface and then were moved on basically in conveyor belts to the subsurface for about 15 kilometers back at the surface. And that's very convenient because it allows us to actually study where these rocks have been, what kind of conditions they experienced, and this plays into the whole earthquake or slow slip story that this is the depth these rocks were at is considered as one of the options for having these slow motions. And so having these rocks now at the surface allows us to actually study their condition, their distribution, etc., and maybe figuring out how they contribute to this slow motion in the subsurface that maybe it's not leading to earthquake, but we kind of need to understand how does it release the stresses, how does it move, etc. And so this is basically the background of why we chose the West Coast of the US to do exactly this study. And Haley's going to give all the information on the exact location, etc.
Yeah, so like Jacqueline said, all that whole event along the West Coast happened, and all these rocks that went through the subduction pathway have come back up to the surface. And where we were studying these rocks is near San Simeon, California. And it's a really convenient location for studying this because we chose the area completely just all along the beach, where the wave action from the beach can erode away some of the weaker material. So that would be like the sediments that were incorporated. And what's left over is these pretty large, variable in size boulders that were also part of that subduction mixture. So we can, with the help of drones and things like that, get a look at the whole coast. So we can really figure out like what's the distribution of these big boulders in space to better understand the mechanics of how this subduction occurred.
That is a really cool use case. And I'm interested in hearing from Garrett and Trevor about how drones were brought into this project to help out with that mapping of these boulders along the shoreline. Garrett, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. So actually, Jacqueline reached out to Trevor initially with how we can help. And in terms of knowledge more, I think is how it started out with the mapping of the beach for them there. That's how it started. And I think we saw a picture of their platform that they were going to try and use to get it done. And we lost faith a little bit. So after that, it became more, what can we do to help them out and make it easier for them and just give them the best results? And Trevor can talk a little bit more about how we did that.
When Jacqueline got a hold of me and showed me the drones they planned to use, that's when I got a hold of Pac Tri and Garrett down there, when I knew that the limitations we had with the flight space on the beach, they weren't going to be able to get anything done with this drone. So we kind of took it upon ourselves to go down there, and there was an opportunity for us to do a little bit of R&D ourselves too. So we got to go down and kind of see what this is all about and give them some high resolution photogrammetry and run it through some mapping software where they could actually tangibly use it and get something to bring back to the office and that could be useful for the research.
Now, I remember talking to you offline, some of the reasons why this was particularly difficult is that you couldn't really fly very close to the beach. You had to be pretty high up due to nesting birds and some other restrictions on the beach. Is that correct?
That's correct. The flight had to take place at 250 feet above sea level. So from where we launched, we were well above the coast. But when we go over the coast, we're able to take a measurement down to where we're at on the ground level, see exactly where we are, put the drone where that needs to be to stay within regulations. And then we had a high enough resolution camera, we were able to zoom in on everything and really provide something that was really, really good.
Jacqueline and Haley, I don't usually get to talk to a person who's using drones for the first time and experiencing them for the first time. When did you think drones were going to be a good solution for this? And what did you learn from the process?
So at the department, we had this, to put it nicely, kind of crummy drone that was just laying around. And I thought like, oh, you know, it's here, so why not just use it? And then as Garrett and Trevor said, when I started talking to Trevor, I sent him a picture. And I mean, honestly, I think they laughed. That was really what happened. and so I was like, yeah, okay, well, maybe this is not going to work. But then these two came up with all these ideas of how we could get this to work within the conditions that were given from regulations. And I mean, it was just super cool. I was heavily impressed when they rolled up with this gigantic drone. And then I was even more impressed when we actually got the 3D rendering of all these pictures they've taken, and the resolution is crazy. It's really good. I mean, it's a lot better than anything I could have imagined. I did not realize that you could really get 3D shapes that really pop up, and you can actually measure things in 3D just from the drone photographs. I was hoping we get just a bunch of pictures from above, but clearly I had really no idea what could be done. And so maybe Haley wants to fill in some of the details of how she's using this 3D model at the moment to actually get at some measurements we're using for the research.
Yeah, so with the 3D model that we got from Garrett and Trevor, it really just captures the entire beach with all the boulders and the large blocks that are all scattered along the beach. I can go into this software and use a little polygon tool and measure all around these blocks so I can get an individual measurement of every block on the beach, which is something that just is pretty much impossible to do by foot. So it really helped us out in that way, doing something that just we couldn't have done otherwise. And then in addition to that, we can measure the volume of the beach space, what the volume of the blocks is within the beach itself. So we can really get that distribution and ratios that we need for the research.
Yeah, volumetrics has been used commercially in a lot of things, in mining and aggregates, but it's really exciting to see it playing a huge role in research. What were some of the challenges, Garrett and Trevor? Maybe you can talk about this from the drone perspective.
Well, first of all, getting the clearance was the initial thing, like with a lot of these jobs, making sure you can fly it legally down there. That whole county has a drone ban. I think that's San Luis Obispo County. Other than that, like it was pretty straightforward.
There was a little bit more technological issues that we ran into on the back end there in terms of the processing. We used a more unconventional method in terms of our tool that we used. We used N300 with an H20 camera, which isn't super well used in terms of mapping practices. So that became a little bit of a technical issue on the back end in terms of the processing, but we worked around it and got it to where we were satisfied with, at least for the time being, and made it work. So we captured a lot of extra images out in the field, so that way we would cover our bases coming back to the office to process. So that was our workaround in terms of getting around that issue there. So not being certain of the camera we were using, honestly.
And can I ask, is that data useful for you right now?
Yeah, it's been really helpful. I mean, it's taking a lot of time to just go through and measure all these things, but I think in the end, it'll really help us out because at the end of the day, it's something that nobody has really done. So we'll get a lot of good data out of it.
If you wanted to do this project without aerial imagery, what would have been the process for that?
There's a few other things we did during our time there that didn't involve drone work. A lot of just going on foot and checking out like what different types of rocks were present, how they appear to be deformed along the cliff faces and things like that. So we got a lot of data out of that. Something that you can't really see from the drone photos, we had to look up close and see really what we were looking at. But otherwise, as far as getting the distribution of these blocks along the beach, it would just have to be a really rough estimate. I guess we could use like Google Earth or something, but again, the resolution just isn't really good enough for that.
So without this technology, you just wouldn't have been able to get the kind of measurements you would need to get this information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did that save you any effort in terms of time or money that you would have had to spend to do this?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it wouldn't have been time effective to try and measure how big these blocks are. It would just take too much time.
A lot of these blocks are very large and pretty irregular. So to be out grounding and pounding on, with a tape measure and climbing all over these rocks, and it's dangerous too. A lot of them are wet, they're slippery, there's growth and stuff on them. So yeah, nothing's ever going to replace a geologist in the field making field measurement and getting their eyes on the rock, so to speak. But with something like this, definitely adds to it. Definitely could cut their time back to ease up on the workload. And it allows them to be out of the field more and they're really take the work back to the office and do the things they need to do and not spend so much time in the field. I mean, as a geologist, everybody loves to be in the field, but there's certain things that if you can cut some corners and save yourself some time and effort, like that's always great.
Declan, do you have anything to add? I see you smiling.
No, I agree with all these assessments. Absolutely. I think it complements the field data, or let's say the more traditional field data of going out, taking measurements, looking at rock types, etc. It complements it really nicely. So having both the drone images and all the data we collect while just wandering along the cliff and looking at all these different things is actually quite the perfect combination. So this way we could really use our field observation, tag individual boulders that we then see in the drone images and knowing, oh, this specific boulder has this specific composition, it's this rock type. And that really helps us to get a good overview of what's the distribution of all these different things along this beach. And as Haley pointed out, and also Trevor mentioned, I think it would be quite difficult to do without the drone footage.
I think it's important to maybe touch on just the scale of the project. I think we mapped over 2 kilometers of this beach face, and just to be down there with, I think they had 4 researchers down there helping on the beach and taking notes on rocks. I mean, that would have been a feat, and it would have been tough to accomplish in 3 days.
Sounds like it. Now that you've gotten your first drone research project checked off, how do you see drones being used in your particular line of research?
I think there's a huge potential. I mean, this is still something that when I go to conferences, et cetera, it's not something that's very common. I mean, occasionally you get maybe like a smallish 3D model where somebody has recorded something with a drone. But I have so far never seen anything on the scale that we just did in this project. So I do think there's a huge potential because it fills this gap between making observations like basically on foot, just looking at things, or then the next step where you have satellite data, which, well, the resolution is completely different. So I feel like the drone images are filling this gap in between where we can actually go from small scale observation we can do just by walking around looking at things, then go to drone images where we can do kilometer scale observations, and then all the way afterwards to basically satellite images where you then have like the multi-kilometer scale. So I think it fills an extremely important gap in observation. And I think it has a big future. And if I can convince Trevor and Garrett ever again to come out to the field, I would love to do this again. I do think there's tons of stuff we could look at that we currently just don't have the data, but that would help us to understand a whole variety of problems in geology.
To be witnessing a new use case for drones that can really make a difference, it's exciting. Was there anything that anyone here learned from the experience or that you thought was particularly interesting?
Personally, I was just blown away. We didn't expect to be as helpful as we were. As everything kind of came together, we saw the potential of what was actually there. And it leaves a doorway open for exciting possibilities in the future. So it's all brainstorming and like where to go from here. It's just an exciting position to be in and exciting thing to think about, really.
Yeah, I think Trevor hit the nail on the head right there. Really opened our eyes as to what we can do and what, you know, hasn't really been done much before. So it was cool to learn that.
I think for me was simply just seeing the quality of data that comes out of these surveys. I had no idea. It's really amazing. And when just talking to Trevor and Garrett, learning that this is not even the best they can do. They could do even better if there are maybe a bit different restrictions in place from flying close to cliffs, etc. So I think, I mean, we just barely scratched the surface of things that we could do.
As we look towards the future, what do you hope to see happen? Is there anything you wish you had that could help you? AI, machine learning, algorithms, things that could help you process all this high quality data?
Yeah, I think I could speak to that a little bit. I think a software program out there that could just process any and every single photo you throw into it, no matter what source it came from. It could always be better, I guess. We are working with some of the best 3D modeling software that there is out there, but it just still doesn't seem like it is the best. You know what I mean? It could always get better, I guess. So that would be cool. There are some images that didn't make the cut that the drone took that we had to X from the final map there. And it's mostly because of software processing issues on the back end. The images were all taken at the same time in the same way. So if we could get that sorted out, and you know, that's not really my wheelhouse, sadly, but if we could, then yeah, I think it'll only get better, but it'll make the maps that much better as well.
Well, a good thing about this podcast is people who are listening on this who do have that capability and just need to understand the problem. And hopefully we can get somebody working on that to make it even better for research projects like this one. I always ask the same last 2 questions for everyone. And maybe I can rephrase this one because it is specifically about the drone industry. But are there any myths you like to dispel or clarify about your professions?
I think we've talked about this before, but the fact that there are still people out there that think that they can just grab a drone and throw it up, even for commercial purposes and uses, and it just not be a problem and do whatever they need it to do. So there is a little bit more of a science behind it. There are, you know, rules and regulations, and you can't just go and do anything you feel like you want to do. It is surprising that you still meet people to this day that, you know, I guess if you don't have any sort of prior knowledge in this industry, then you might think that way as well. But that is definitely a myth. So obviously, I think for most of the listeners here, they're probably aware of that. But it's still surprising to know that there are people out there that don't. So.
But even people who are in the drone industry, I think that it's really important to know that there is a large contingent of people who are still learning about this technology that still need us to start from the ground level and explain what this drone technology can do. And it's an ongoing process. Having people like you, Jacqueline and Haley, come over and talk about, you know, what you learned and how you use drones is really inspiring for us, but also helpful for us to understand. What are some things that you want people to know about people who are using drones for the first time?
But I would certainly tell other geologists, start talking to people like Garrett and Trevor. They can do things that none of us can do. And they allow us to get access to things otherwise we would have no idea about. So I would certainly encourage anybody that does field geology to maybe look into the possibility to kind of get a little bit of a broader idea of what's out there with engaging with some people that know how to fly drones, that know how to process the data. It really has opened doors that were not open before.
And it's really great to have people like Trevor and Garrett who have some background in that field who can bring that knowledge and that understanding. My final question is, any last thoughts or information you'd like to share?
I'm going to touch on a little bit about what you just said about getting like people like Garrett and I into this. Like, this has been an opportunity for us to bring this thing full circle. Like, we got out of school, we got into drones. We weren't in geology. We weren't doing this. So we still have this passion in us for this thing we went to school for, the stuff we will learn. We love science. We're driven, you know, and like, we kind of get pigeonholed into doing some of these inspections type things. Like, I'm hungry. We want more. So it's just like to be able to bring everything together, mix these drones with our scientific background. It's just been such a huge thing. Just inspiring, exciting, just it's everything rolled into one.
Maybe I can take off on this. I mean, it was really great working with two geologists. I mean, you know, Trevor and Garrett, they have a geology background. So it was easy for me to kind of explain, oh, you know, we want to do this and that. And they're like, yeah, we got it. Despite maybe that's not necessarily an obvious career path, but in this case, it just worked out absolutely fantastically.
I would love for it to continue to work out this way as nicely as it did. Honestly, it was refreshing to be able to work on a project with our background in mind. And I hope there are future projects very similar to it.
Fantastic. Haley, do you have any last words?
I think that it would be awesome for more geologists to get more into the drone aspect of field work. I think it could advance the science that much further.
Great last words. Thank you, Garrett, Trevor, Jacqueline, and Haley for joining me today. It's been a truly inspirational conversation. Always excited when science and drones come together to do really cool stuff. I look forward to seeing how drones are used in geology moving forward.
Thank you for having us on, Danielle.
That's this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed listening and will join us again for our next story from 400 feet. Until then, fly safe.